Welcome into the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. I tell you, folks, one of the subjects we have here on the show that I absolutely look forward to is cryptids. And one of those cryptids that absolutely makes my skin crawl is skinwalkers and dogman and those creatures that you know when you're out there in the wild that could absolutely creep up on you and could take you apart in a second, without a second thought. You know, looking into the research that Linda Godfrey did and some of the research that even Jay Bachochin does, some of those researchers that are out there, I admire them quite a bit. Those people that go out in the wild, or even Brenda Harris, some of those researchers that are out there and have to deal with it and know that at any particular time they're in danger, that they could be got at any time, absolutely makes my skin crawl. I had the opportunity to reach out to Seth Breedlove, who is one of the most prolific filmmakers of our time in the paranormal, who has an absolutely knock-it-out-of-the-park movie that's out there right now and available on DVD from Small Town Monsters called The Skinwalkers, American Werewolves 2. Folks, you got to get a hold of this movie. You got to see this movie. It'll make your skin crawl, literally. Some of the people who step forward and tell their stories, it's chilling. It will grab you by the heart. We'll talk to Seth about it. And it makes you wonder why people continue to live where they live. I mean, I know that it's tied to the culture, but man, the stories that we'll talk about today, it just absolutely, it boggles my mind how people can deal with this supernatural evil on a day-to-day basis. Let's bring Seth in and talk a little bit about these skinwalkers and the American werewolves in this part two that's been put together by this wonderful filmmaker. Seth Breedlove is an Ohio filmmaker. He's written, edited, produced, directed shorts and features about a variety of topics, but is best known for his production company and the films they produced under the Small Town Monsters banner. Before film, Breedlove wrote for a number of websites, newspapers, and magazines and learned some of the skills he employs as a director while working as a reporter. Seth has also appeared on numerous television and radio programs. He's been on this program before. I want to welcome him back to Darkness Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, let's bring him back. Seth Breedlove, welcome, my friend, back to Darkness Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Seth, again, I tip my cap to you, my friend. What a movie. I told you before the program, you have a way of taking and building tension in these movies, and I don't scare easy. I don't jump easy at any of these movies. In fact, sometimes I fall asleep at different thrillers. I catch a nice nap. During this movie, I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm listening to some of these experiences. And the way you build tension, the way that you weave people's stories in and out, along with some recreations, to me, I'm on the edge of my seat for the entire, almost hour and a half that you're telling these stories about the four corners here in the southwestern U.S. And first of all, I want to bring up with Small Town Monsters, you focus on a lot of these creatures. And I guess I want to ask this question right off the bat. How do you continue to find the horror and the terror behind these monsters?
Well, I mean, this series, especially American Werewolves, is a really easy, an easy one for me because it's drawing so much off the stuff that I was into as a kid, or I remember being terrified of as a kid. Unsolved. There's elements of Unsolved Mysteries visually in this. There's elements of the old TV show Sightings in this. So for inspiration, this one's an easy one to find that inspiration because of the, so much of the visuals are heavily influenced by 90s, early 90s paranormal stuff. Visually, it's even presented in like essentially like a 4:3 aspect ratio like you would find on television back in the early 90s. So I don't know, creatively when I'm editing it is when the visuals start to come into play. Like that's when I start to put the accompanying visuals together because I'm usually just inspired by whatever the people are talking about. And in this one, I can pull from a lot of different elements from the 80s and 90s to tie those visuals together. But at the end of the day, though, the both American Werewolves movies are much more about the witness stories than they are those creepy visuals. The visuals are just supposed to heighten, you know, or accompany what the witnesses are saying, and the witnesses are front and center in both these movies. We don't even really spend much time on, you know, like the folklore surrounding the area and stuff like that. We don't spend too much time on that unless it's directly related to a witness story. Which in this one, there's a segment toward the very beginning that, it's basically a secondhand story that came to this lady about like a shape-shifting lady that was given a ride home from a party. And that does play into the local folklore of the area and shape-shifting and things like that. So, but as far as like the tension and all that, I think all the credit goes to the witness stories more than, you know, more than the visuals.
I do want to take you backwards for a second here. You talk about shooting in 4:3 and that claustrophobic mm-hmm. feel. I think immediately, and to your credit, you bring people in right away, and it does feel very claustrophobic at first. When you mm-hmm. first start out the movie, you kind of suck people in with that, and it does have that feel right away, that 90s feel. And I wondered about that at first. As I first start watching the movie, I'm like, ooh, wow, it does feel very, I feel very closed in. Mm-hmm. And I do, it does feel very retro at first. But it felt good. You know, it felt comfortable, like an old blanket, you know, when you first start watching.
Well, yeah, so the first movie, American Werewolves 1, is where we started with a 4:3 aspect ratio. And when we shot it, we were like, let's do it in 4:3. And then, you know, very often in the production process, I'll have some idea that we think we're going to utilize that we never actually do. And I think that's how I viewed the 4:3 on that movie. We were like, let's shoot it for 4:3, but it's probably not going to be 4:3. But then it got into post-production and the movie had no voice. It was just like this, you know, as witness stories, a little bit of creepy B-roll to accompany them. And it was really bothering me through the post-production on that movie. There's a version of that movie that was cut maybe 3 weeks prior to the final cut. And it still had no 4:3 aspect ratio. Everything was just sort of put on screen in the modern way. Mm-hmm. And then I had a night where I was watching Sightings in bed, and I was like, I need to just go for the whole push, really push those 90 visuals with like the double exposures and the, you know, some of the fade outs and the transitions between different interview segments and all that. All that was inspired by 90s TV, and all that was first put into play with that first movie. But the 4:3 aspect ratio, I really like. It's not true. This isn't actually 4:3. I can't remember what the aspect ratio is, but it's slightly wider than 4:3.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to lose the expansiveness of some of those Southwest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the locations we were filming in. So we did widen it out a little bit, but it's not too much wider than 4:3. But I think that claustrophobia you talked about really is what we were going for, especially because There's two camera angles on all the interviews. One is like this real, the head of the person we're interviewing kind of sits at the bottom of the frame. Yes. And then there's all this kind of like open space around them. That was very consciously done to indicate this is going to sound like film school nerd stuff, but it's supposed to sort of, indicate I don't even know how to put it, the small scale of the person we're talking to, the way they might have felt when faced with something, you know, like a skinwalker or a dogman. And then the other one's just this extreme close-up profile shot, which is really supposed to heighten the claustrophobia while also putting you in the place of the witness, you know, that is telling the story. So that's how we used the 4:3 in a way that I thought would benefit, you know, the film.
No, totally. And then you also managed to capture the expansiveness in that 4:3 of the terrain. mm-hmm. at the same time of keeping it in that smaller scale, which again, I tip my cap to. And then also when you got some of the creatures, you also managed to get that underneath expansiveness of and capture that feeling of a victim looking up at the predator mm-hmm. as it's upon you, which was really cool as well. Again, more film school stuff. But you nailed it in all aspects. While also getting what I found interesting, without providing too many spoilers, Brenda Harris provides you later on in the film with some footage,
yeah.
which is absolutely terrifying. And you put all that together and by God, you got yourself a home run. You really do.
Yeah, that the Brenda Harris section was probably my favorite to film just because we spent more time on the res there than we did any of the other locations. Mm-hmm. So we got to spend a good amount of time with her and her son there. And they took us around, showed us a few different locations where there's been not just Dogman and Skinwalker stuff, but, Bigfoot activity, some UFO stuff. She was showing us all these locations on the res that are like high strangeness areas, and that was super cool. And then, just spending time at their house and talking to them and learning about that way of life. Her dad was like a pastor, like a Baptist pastor back in the day, and I grew up really? A Baptist, so like we had that in common. Talked about that stuff and. She invited me to church actually on Sunday,
really?
But I didn't get to go. I would have gone, but I was not close enough to her that it would have made sense. And it would have cut like 4 hours out of our day. But that was a really cool day, was being with her and learning about all the weirdness on their property there on the res.
You know that. Well, let's talk about that now, because what's really interesting about, and I'll only bring up this short part of that footage. Again, I want to leave it for people who actually see the movie. She does bring up an instance where she thinks she sees something that's related to a UFO in the footage, mm-hmm. which is interesting because when we talk about a lot of these sightings, it's strictly the Skinwalker in the sighting, or it's a lot about the Dogman in the sighting. You almost never hear of, it's more typical to see something of a UFO along with a Sasquatch or a UFO with some type of creature like that. But to see a UFO along with something like a Skinwalker, a UFO with like a Dogman. Do you find that unusual?
No.
No?
I don't. No, no. Because anytime I've interviewed witnesses who have ongoing activity at one location, mm-hmm. there's UFO reports in conjunction with Dogman.
Really?
Yeah, this would be the third or fourth witness who I've interviewed where they have ongoing activity. You know, most of the people you talk to who encounter like a Dogman are hiking and see something in the woods, or they're driving and they see something, you know, it's rare to find like ongoing Dogman activity in one location. The one that jumps to mind is Lee Hample in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And Lee is in Bray Road Beast. He's got this farm on the other side of Bray Road where he's had ongoing activity for like a decade or more. And I always think of Lee's an interesting guy because he documents everything. He takes photos of everything that goes on his property. And a lot of the photos are of stuff you can kind of explain away. But then in the middle of like going through all these photos, one of the things that caught my eye is probably like the most believable UFO photo I've ever seen. And I think it was taken like the day before he had some weird Dogman type stuff happen on the property. So, you know, it makes sense to me because I think that the Dogman topic is a much more, is more supernatural than, you know, maybe like a Bigfoot or a lake monster or something like that. So every time I interview a witness, there's some sort of high strangeness aspect to it, or there's a direct tie to the occult. Like either they're in a place where there's been occult activity, or they themselves, the witness themselves, is engaged in the occult, and somehow, you know, like a lot of those encounters, those witnesses have those things in common. But UFOs and Dogman that in a place where there's ongoing reports is really common. That's extremely common.
Interesting. You mentioned the occult. Mm-hmm. there is a gentleman who appears at the end of the movie who has an absolutely frightening tale. I wasn't going to jump into this until the end of the interview, but I think I want to talk about it now. And let's talk about it just briefly now. And I don't want to get too deep into it. Like I said, I want to leave it for people who watch the movie. But he talks about his father being a medicine man. And that his father would talk about, you know, don't pay too much mind to it. A lot of this is a running theme throughout the movie. Don't pay it a lot of mind. And that's a lot of what a lot of the tribes will tell you. We don't address it. We don't talk about it. But the one thing he said about his father was that when he would, I'm trying to find the right words here, Seth, that his father, not that he would draw these things to their home, but these things were drawn to his home. So essentially he would try to go to sleep at night and he would hear these skinwalkers outside of his home to the point where one night he tries to go to sleep and he hears one on the roof.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely chilling. I'm not going to tell the rest of the story. I want to leave it for people who watch the movie. But the terror in this man's eyes, to the point where he's got tears in his eyes, Seth, and he's having a hard time getting through the story. Mm-hmm. And this is a grown man who's trying to get through this story. And you can see that the fear is so real and almost like the skinwalker is standing in front of him at this particular point. I got to ask you, at that point, as a filmmaker, is it hard for you to not want to empathize with your subject? And I mean, I realize you have to remain impartial and you're getting through, you know, your material and you're gathering this material, but emotionally you have to tie yourself somewhat into your subject as well. How do you separate and get through your material and not tie yourself into your material?
The emotion there too is coming from the fact that this thing basically attacked his dad. That's the, you know, the other part of that story is right. that the skinwalker ended up attacking his dad. And he has some feelings about that and emotions. When it comes to that, I'm not trying to remain impartial at the, you know, when I'm interviewing a witness who has a strong emotional reaction to it. I definitely empathize with any witness, you know, unless it's like a case, and this has only happened like one or two times where I interview someone, I'm 100% convinced they're making their story up. Mm-hmm. Every witness that I interview, I end up empathizing with pretty strongly, but especially the ones who are emotionally wrecked by it and still, you know, have a hard time expressing, you know, what happened to them. What always strikes me is these people have nothing to gain by telling us these stories, you know, but they do. They open up about their story. There's nothing for them to gain from that. And so we have to really respect the fact that they're willing to sit down with us. All they're going to get is, you know, made fun of or whatever, you know, by people who see the movie. So just documenting it is the biggest part of that. That's all that I've talked to witnesses where, you know, maybe they're at the end of their lives or close to the end of their lives. And for them, they just want the story on camera so that when they're gone, that's down somewhere. There was a lady we interviewed in Alaska 2 years ago, this very elderly native lady. And she told us a story about seeing a Bigfoot in the mountains when she was a child. And that was her entire reason for telling us the story was she's not going to be here much longer. That's what she told us. I'm not going to be here much longer. I just want to make sure that I have this documented somewhere. So, for me, I don't try to be impartial when it comes to that. I'm just interviewing people. And part of that is putting them at ease. You know, and with George, we had to cut, you know, cause he did cry. And very often people don't want that on camera. So we'll cut, you know, away from that or whatever. And in that case, we cut for him. There was an interview we did for the Dogman Territory movie we have coming out later this year. And the witness took us to a sighting location where everything had happened to him. He'd encountered multiple dogmen and Bigfoot in the same incident. Felt like his life was in danger, and he took us to that location and broke down in tears on camera just being there. So it's not uncommon. It happens probably once a movie we interview someone who's been extremely, you know, emotionally affected by this stuff.
I guess I bring this up, and this is the reason I bring it up, Seth, is because with this particular subject, with Skinwalker, you're dealing with not only tradition, you're dealing with a cultural belief, you're dealing with a spiritual belief, you're dealing with ties to a community that go much deeper than just, you know, I saw some lights in the sky, or I saw a spirit standing in front of me and ooh, it was scary. Things that go beyond just something ethereal that's standing in front of you that might be a little spooky. It's a physical threat. I mean, these are things that potentially could leave marks, that could disembowel you, that could, you know, these are actual, you know, it's leaving tracks on the ground. It's following you to your home. It's standing on your roof. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, there's some absolutely chilling stories here. These aren't little, you know, something standing in a costume from 1812 in front of you and asking for help or anything like that. This isn't your typical ghost story to me. I guess that's why I find this subject more frightening than your typical ghost or even, you know, alien lights in the sky or anything like that. Terrifying. Am I off base with that?
No, this is definitely, there's something very ethereal about it, but it's very tangible in the way it impacts witnesses, this phenomenon in particular. Especially when you compare it to the other stuff that I've made movies about, it just is on another, there's something about it that's very dark, very negative. I've never interviewed a witness of a dogman who had a positive experience, you know, whereas with stuff like Bigfoot or even UFOs, there are a good number of witnesses who have encounters that are just kind of like fleeting glances of something moving through the woods, or like, you know, they see a UFO and they have a positive feeling because of it, whatever. This is not that at all. I've never talked to a witness who was like, I loved having this dogman encounter. You know, you get a lot of really weird, dark aspects to it. Now, this movie is interesting because it's called American Werewolves. It's definitely about, there's definitely a couple dogman encounters, but it's very much about shape-shifting more so than dogman. You know, and I think the biggest knock on the movie that I've seen are people that seem outraged that we because of the title of the film, they think we believe that Skinwalker and Dogman are interchangeable. We don't. You know, a Skinwalker is a very, very different subject from a Dogman. But they all kind of fall under that werewolf, lycanthropy, shapeshifter, you know, title. So that's why it fits within the series. And that Skinwalker topic in particular is, I mean, it takes the Dogman thing and flips it on its head and then goes 1,000 shades darker. I think this is definitely one of the more disturbing topics that you can get into in the paranormal world. I think the witnesses, when you talk to them, are traumatized by the event in a way that I haven't interviewed, you know, you don't see it commonly with a lot of the other phenomenon. So there's something in particular about this one that really seems to negatively impact those who encounter it. Well, you know, in this movie, especially, there's a number of these witnesses who have not managed to outrun, you know, the phenomenon. And in some of the cases, they had experiences when they were children and are now much later in life, and it still haunts them today.
If I can also tie in too, I don't think it's a stretch for people to see where the title comes from as well. If you just, it doesn't take much to see where the title comes from. There's plenty of references within the movie when it comes to a couple of the stories tying into the fact that they see a giant wolf. and they see the fact that these skinwalkers shift into wolves, and the fact that it's even said, I believe it's by George, that a lot of times the magical reference is that it was an evil presence that showed man how to wear the skin of a wolf and be able to learn how to run faster.
Yeah.
If that doesn't tell you what the name of the movie comes from, nothing will.
Right. Right.
I mean, yeah, it hits you in the head.
No. And I mean, the crazy thing is, the more you look into some of these different shapeshifter topics, the more they all kind of run, you know, in line with the others. Dogman, sort of the European werewolves, Rougarou in the southern United States, you know, the French Loup-Garou, even drawing in something like the Wendigo, isn't that, you know, out of the, it's not that much of a stretch. And then Skinwalker kind of fits in there too. It's definitely a family of topics that go perfectly in line with one another. You know, and the Skinwalker stuff is just a lot darker than those others. I think it's the idea maybe that, you know, you're kind of welcoming this curse on yourself by killing someone you love. That's sort of the main way you become a Skinwalker. So just the origin of the legend itself is a lot darker than, you know, most of the other stuff that we look into.
Very true. Let's take our break here. When we come back, Seth, I want to talk a little bit about the area of the country you were in and about some statistics that are a little confusing, not only confusing, but dangerous, as a matter of fact, and a little bit about the feel you got from the people you interviewed and the amount of danger they're actually in. I mean, there's other factors to consider. And I also want to talk about another researcher in the field and how your movie might tie into this researcher. I'm talking about David Pilates and the missing 411 phenomenon and how you may believe Dogman and Skinwalker may tie into that phenomenon as well. Mm-hmm. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the fact that indigenous people in the area that you were in, that Four Corners area, tie into a lot of the missing person cases that come up with missing 411 and whatnot. We're going to tie in all that phenomenon when we come back. The movie, folks, is absolutely phenomenal. It's out there right now. It's available on DVD. We have a link in the description of this program so you can pick it up. It is called The Skinwalkers, American Werewolves 2. We have it. It's DVD and streaming, correct?
Yeah, streaming. It should be on all the major platforms, Amazon and Hulu and all those. It should be gettable.
Right. And we have a link for you right now in the description of this program. When we come back, more with Seth Breedlove from Small Town Monsters. When we come back on the best in paranormal programming, this is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. With us is filmmaker Seth Breedlove. We're talking about the new movie that's out right now on DVD and available on streaming. Of course, the movie is The Skinwalkers, American Werewolves 2. When we last left you, we were talking about, well, the phenomena of people going missing. And we were talking about the Skinwalkers and Dogman. And I wanted to tie it into David Pilates' research when it came to missing 411. One of the interesting things that comes up in one of your graphics in the movie is that in that area of Four Corners, I believe it is, and I'm grasping for the figure here. I didn't write it down, and I apologize here, Seth. That is it 10% of indigenous people in two different counties?
It's a massive number that I also don't remember.
Yeah, but there's quite a few indigenous people that make that, as far as missing people in America that come up. Well, put it this way, the amount of missing people and indigenous people that come up missing in America are massive. It's a massive issue. And it's been brought up on a national scale in many different areas. I know in Minnesota, it's been brought up here where I am, that missing indigenous people are an issue. But it's especially an issue in the Four Corners area where you shot, in New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, that area. Now, when you tie it into the Dogman and Skinwalker phenomena that you're talking about, I don't know that I want to tie it directly to that. I know David Pilates has brought up the UFO phenomena when he talks about missing people.
Yeah.
How much supernaturally do you tie into that missing indigenous people issue? How much do you tie into a human phenomena? How much do you tie into people just going missing who wander off and disappear?
Well, I think you have to be really cautious when talking about this particular topic, because there's real people that are losing their lives and there's families that have lost family members due to this topic. So I don't know. I don't want to weigh in and say I believe 100% of Dogman's taking people. I don't really know. I know that drugs are a huge issue. You know, that was the thing we kept hearing when we were in New Mexico, is that a massive problem. Human trafficking is a huge problem.
Yeah.
There's people being taken and, you know, sold, and that is, you know, unfortunately we have a habit in this country of kind of turning our backs on the people on the reservation. I saw it myself while I was there. You know, they're limited in funds, in police, you know, like in law enforcement. And so it's down to them a lot of the times to watch their own backs. So they're an easy target. So those things have to be kept in mind at all times. I will say that I'm going to keep hitting on this, but there's something very dark about this Dogman thing. And if you're including the Skinwalker topic in the, when I say Dogman thing, it's substantially darker. So I do think that if you're talking about Skinwalker cases, we know for a fact that people that want to become a Skinwalker, part of that ritual involves killing someone. So, you know, like, can you bring in that, you know, some of these missing people into that fact? Sure. And I'm sure that there are people that have gone missing or been killed directly due to, you know, someone messing around with this Skinwalker stuff. And, you know, when it comes to the Dogman thing, I don't know what to make of the Dogman subject as far as whether or not there is a flesh and blood component to the Dogman subject. I don't know if these things are physically here when people encounter them. There's a large part of me that thinks they're not, because of the stories I've heard, the way the interactions tend to go, stories about these things sort of disappearing and reappearing or having a translucent quality to them. You know, there's a large part of me that thinks that these things are not actually here when people are encountering them, that they're either some sort of spirit manifesting, or like, I don't know what to make of it. It's a very different topic from typical cryptozoology. You know, Aaron Deese, who's part of the STM crew, he's written two books about the Dogman subject. He's kind of in the camp of these things being real flesh and blood animals. I've interviewed probably a neighborhood of the Dogman at this point. It is so far outside of the realm of possibility for me that these things are flesh and blood. They almost have to be some sort of demon or spirit or something. Yeah, there's something else going on there. Really? To me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, there's something to that, because when you're talking in the movie, and George really, I think, hits it home too, when he talks about the magical aspect of it, I don't want to say belabors the point, but he really does talk about the fact that he believes that these things are summoned, especially Skinwalkers, are summoned magically. And you brought it up that someone has to be killed or sacrificed in order for a Skinwalker to be brought about magically. I want to ask you this question, Seth, because although it's not really fleshed out as to how it comes about.
Right.
Off camera, did anyone tell you any stories about, more specifically, about how this happens? I know it's taboo for them to talk about it, but...
Yeah, the most specific things got was with the anonymous witness in the film. You know, and he pretty much tells it the way it is, which is that when someone becomes a skinwalker, again, this is not my story to tell. So me, you know, keep in mind, I'm just a white dude relaying information given to me by actual natives.
Sure.
Indigenous people. As I understand it, someone performs this ritual and becomes a skinwalker. They're essentially possessed of, you know, some sort of demonic entity, whatever you want to call it, that grants them certain powers. You know, they're supposedly they can run faster, they're stronger, they don't feel pain, things like that. Do they actually become like a dog man or a werewolf? No. That is not a part of Skinwalker, the lore surrounding skinwalkers. They will wear like a pelt over their head or a mask, you know, a dog's dog mask, dog skull, something like that, a wolf skull. They're not actually changing their form. So the process that goes into becoming a skinwalker is much more in depth than we get into in this film, mostly because none of the native people we interviewed, none of the indigenous people we interviewed want to talk about it. And that includes Brenda. George doesn't really like talking about it. The anonymous witness is the only guy who was willing to talk about it, and he's anonymous for a reason. He does not want his identity out there because, you know, the Navajo culture sort of forbids them from speaking about this.
Well, Brenda brings up a crazy fact, and she brings it up about a couple different things, and that's one about Bigfoot and one about the skinwalker, something to the effect of looking into their eyes or something like that, and you only have so much time to live. What was that all about?
Yeah, if they look into your eyes, then you're pretty much cursed to you're doomed to die. That's the Bigfoot thing. She had a lot of the lore regarding Bigfoot that I had never heard before. I mean, that was my first time hearing. There was a lot more, you know, on the cutting room floor regarding other phenomena beyond Dogman and Skinwalker. She had all sorts of stuff she was telling us about when we were there. There's some of that reservation cryptid stuff you don't want to get involved with. And I remember hearing JC Johnson talk about that stuff back in the day. JC was like this well-known investigator, you know, the Four Corners region.
We had JC on the program a couple of times before he passed. Yeah.
Yeah. The movie's dedicated to him. But yeah, JC, I remember him talking about that stuff. You just don't want to, a lot of it, you just don't want to mess around with. So much of it has like dark connotations. It's just it takes on a different meaning. Some of these cryptids take on a different meaning on the res than they do, you know, in the rest of the U.S.
Now, I love the fact that it is dedicated, the movie is dedicated to JC. I wonder, and I believe it was Wes who had some experience with JC, who had maybe even learned under JC a little bit.
Yep.
When talking to a few of the people in Four Corners, what kind of stuff had they learned from JC? Did you find that maybe some of JC's legacy was around, maybe even through Brenda through different people? And
Brenda, George, Wes, they're all people who worked with JC Johnson. Robert Kreider, who we actually interviewed when we were there. I can't even remember. I don't think he actually made it into this movie, but he was in, we interviewed him for our Chupacabra film. He had worked with JC Johnson. Everyone that knew the man loved the guy.
Yeah.
But his fingerprints are still very much on, you know, the research that goes on in that part of the country. I mean, I'm only aware of the Four Corners part of the country and its ties to supernatural and paranormal phenomena because of J.C. Johnson. Because I remember listening to interviews with him on Darkness Radio and Eric Altman's show. Like, mm-hmm. I remember that guy talking on those podcasts, and that was my introduction to this place. So it would have been impossible to make a movie there and not feel his, you know, his presence still, you know, behind the scenes on everything that goes on there. There's definitely, he's still looming pretty large in the research field there.
Yeah.
I don't think that area and the researchers there will manage to, you know, or there was something about JC that seemed to be a glue that held everything together. Because one thing I've come to find is that a lot of the people that are involved in the research there do not get along anymore since he's gone.
Really?
And there must have been something about him that was really special. And we all know that the field is like this. I mean, sure. You have so many different personalities and things like that. And it does very often take some sort of figurehead to keep all these warring personalities, you know, involved with one another. And it seems to me that that would have been JC, because as soon as he was gone, it kind of like a lot of the playing nice together that was going on beforehand kind of seems to have gone away.
Unfortunately. Yeah. And yeah, JC was something special. He really had a way of not only having extreme knowledge of the field, but keeping things warm and keeping you on the edge of your seat and being able to, bring in a room alive, things like that too.
Yeah.
And a hell of a storyteller.
Man. I was literally just about to say the guy was a whale of a storyteller.
Like
a great, great storyteller, because I can remember stories he would tell on podcasts, and I'm talking like 15 years ago. I haven't listened to podcasts in a long time.
Yeah.
And that stuff still sticks with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to dig up some archives this weekend and listen to some of those. But a great storyteller. That's for sure. Now, one of the stories, and I want to kind of jump back to this for a second here. One of the stories in the movie involves an older lady and a wolf. Mm-hmm. Now, with the shape-shifting of the skinwalker, mm-hmm. the thing that we begin to understand with this skinwalker is you see a human form, and then all of a sudden you see a wolf. One of the things I wanted to ask you here, Seth, is in the process of shooting this movie, does anyone really say that they see the person change into the animal, the animal change into the person directly? Because it seems like you see a person and then you see the animal, but no one ever says, I saw it change directly into.
Yeah, no, I don't recall on this film, I don't recall anyone saying I saw, you know, sort of an American werewolf in London transformation sequence. Yeah. To my mind, I can't think of anyone saying that. You know, you had the lady who talked about the hitchhiker turning into a dog, like a very large wolf. But in that case, the lady, the old lady that they gave the ride to, mm-hmm. They give this hitchhiker a ride. They let her out at a certain spot. She walks away, and then all of a sudden, this wolf has kind of taken her place. It all happens off camera. I mean, right. Every time you talk to someone, you know, if they encounter a person and who then becomes a wolf, it's never in front of their eyes, right. Which is interesting. I don't know what that means. You know, I don't know if they're being replaced, you know, in our reality, yeah. Or if, and they go somewhere else or how that works. But the witnesses, all the witnesses we spoke to, in this film, the transformation sort of takes place elsewhere.
Yeah, which
or
is
in between the frames.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is unusual, you know, to not have someone see the transformation. Almost like when they look away, it happens. It's almost like mm-hmm. a sleight of hand, you know, like a supernatural sleight of hand.
Yeah, but I've interviewed a good number of like shapeshifter witnesses over the years. Mm-hmm. And there's only been a couple times where I talked to anyone who said they saw any sort of transformation happen before their eyes.
Really?
You know, like I remember on Bray Road, there was a lady who said that she saw a man's face like take on the appearance of a dog before mm-hmm. her eyes. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of too many others where they've talked about some sort of transformation taking place before them.
Interesting.
So it must just be, I don't know what accounts for that, but that's on this film in particular. That was something that I noticed.
Maybe there is a portal type thing that happens there, or something happens with a switch. Who knows? It's an interesting theory to talk about though. That's for sure. So the question is, from here, future projects, what happens from here now from American Werewolves too?
We have so much coming out this year, because this movie was supposed to come out last year. There was another movie that was supposed to come out last year as well that still hasn't come out. And then we have another movie that was made last year that still hasn't come out. So we have three of last year's roster still to come out this year. We have this one's coming out, about to come out. We have On the Trail of Bigfoot, The Origin, which is coming out sometime this spring. And then we have Cryptid, : The Chupacabra still to come out. And those are all three films that were made last year. For the 2024 roster, we have Dogman Territory, which is a tie into Aaron Deese's Hunting Grounds book, which is a follow-up to last year's The Dogman Triangle film and book. And then we have, let me think, there's a lot. We're about to go film On the Trail of Bigfoot, The Ancients. We're working on a movie called Lost Contact, which is about the Thomas Mantell UFO related crash over Kentucky.
Okay.
And then what's the other one? There's one more. Cryptid, : The Goat Man. And then we have an Ogopogo movie that is coming out called Cursed Waters. That'll be out in June. That covers the feature films, but then we have another film coming out called Phantom Lights that's all about Chestnut Ridge area orb activity. That one's being directed by Tyler Hall. The Ogopogo movie and Cryptid, The Goat Man, are being made by Eli Watson. And then we have episodic content that runs on our YouTube channel and our FAST platform that we're about to launch. The episodic stuff is also starting to appear on Tubi and Amazon and things like that too. So if there's multiple series running right now, there's Bigfoot Beyond the Trail, Sasquatch Unearthed is a series that runs throughout the year. It's usually 6 to 8 episodes. Last year was on West Virginia. It was called Mountain State Monsters. The one we're about to start shooting is called Buckeye Bigfoot, so it's in Ohio. There's Eli Watson does a series called Road to Discovery. And then there's another series he does occasionally called Mysteries and Monsters. We're about to launch a new show called UFOs Revisited that we already shot. And that's a fun, like, roundtable discussion show that is still edited like a documentary, like a typical documentary, but rather than having, you know, talking head interviews, it's at a roundtable, and kind of the whole show kind of revolves around this discussion between the panel of guests. You know, and it includes people like Ron Murphy and Micah Hanks and Katie Page, and Aaron Deese is the host of that show. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then we have another season of On the Trail of UFOs filming later this year. There's other stuff that we need to start shooting here too. So there's a lot going on.
I know you guys are the prolific outlet for anything paranormal out there right now. I know when I'm on DirecTV, on Samsung TV, there's something Small Town Monsters on all the time. There's two new channels on DirecTV that has something Small Town Monsters on all the time. Mm-hmm. Samsung TV has a channel on, I think it's an Alien Nation channel on right now. Yeah. That has something Small Town Monsters on all the time.
Keep your eyes on that Samsung platform, because that's where Unexplained TV is going to pop up, and that's our own version of that Alien Nation channel.
Okay.
So we're going to have our own ongoing, like, STM channel where you'll be able to find all of our movies, all the episodic content, eventually some of the podcasts will be on there, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, we're excited for that.
So, I mean, the name Small Town Monsters has been top of the mind, my friend. So, I've everywhere I've looked, I've seen Small Town Monsters. So, your brand is out there. It is out
there. Well, that's the goal.
Yeah. Oh, you've been, let me tell you, you've been out there like Coca-Cola. That's for sure. So, so I had to reach out. I had to tell you that that I wanted to, I'm the one who reached out to you. I wanted to see the Skinwalkers, American Werewolves 2, and I wanted to catch it and see what it was all about.
Yeah,
and,
well, I appreciate it.
And we have Aaron Dees coming up at the towards the end of the month, and we'll sit down with him as well. So
that's awesome. He's great. He's he's been a blast. He came on, well, he came on staff maybe a year ago, but he's really coming to his own at SCM now. He's a full timer, and he's part of the SCM story group alongside Heather Mosier, who's our researcher. So he's a big part of what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have got one heck of a brand going, my friend, and I tell you, it's heading out there like a freight train right now. So continued much success to you, and look forward to everything you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thank you, my friend. Seth Breedlove, everybody. And we've got links in the description of this program so you can keep up with Small Town Monsters. I want to thank Seth Breedlove for being on the program today. Again, The Skinwalkers, American Werewolves 2 is available on DVD and through streaming. We have a link in the description of this program, and you can click on that link and get that movie. I encourage you fully to get that movie, as it is a wonderful movie, and it will chill you to the bone. So go ahead and get that movie right now and see it for yourself. Lots of good stuff in that movie. Again, Seth has outdone himself once again. We'll have Aaron Dees on. We'll have Aaron Dees back on probably in a couple of weeks here to talk about the new project, which is a book, and then later a movie here in just a couple of weeks in April. Looking forward to that as well. Small Town Monsters is always coming out with some quality stuff, so I'm looking forward to having Aaron on the program here as well in just a couple of weeks. Folks, before we head into the weekend, I want to remind you once again, Beer City Bruiser has had a little bit of a shakeup at home in that they've had some repairs that have needed to be done at home. We've gone through it time and time again here on the program. I don't feel like I have to explain it once again, but they had a devastating thing happen to their house where he's unable to broadcast from home. He will be back on the program here shortly, but it's going to take some time. They had to have a restoration team come into their home and redo everything, including the subfloor at the home. And things don't move very quickly in North Carolina when it comes to redoing the house. So it's taken a few months to redo the house. I keep giving updates here on the show and I get comments on social media. Well, I guess we're never going to hear anything about Bruiser ever again. I keep updating you guys on a weekly basis. I don't know how you're not catching these updates, but I'm updating it again. Bruiser will be back on as soon as he's able to be back on the show. In the meantime, I want to thank both Mally and Jessica for doing a bang-up job of being on the program and filling in at co-host. And actually, they're regular co-hosts here on the show, so it's not really like they're even filling in. They're doing their regular bang-up job, so I appreciate them, coming in and doing a bang-up job while Bruiser's out. So, again, Bruiser will be back when he's able to be back, folks. It's not like we're hiding him in a corner of North Carolina and keeping him from you. He's got issues at home that need to be taken care of as far as getting his house back together. This issue gone wrong at home was so devastating that he just can't record, so we'll get him back as soon as we can, but we can't force his restoration company to fix his house any faster than what can be done. So that's essentially what's being done right now. So when he can come back, we'll let you know. We can't, like I said, we can't make things move along any faster than what they can. So, and he's been good about updating you guys too. He'll pop on social media and just let you know he's still around, he's still there. And in fact, if you miss him, honest to God, get Title Match Network. He's still wrestling for AML Wrestling, and you can still see his bright shiny face on AML wrestling. So if you're not familiar on how to get Title Match Network, just go to darknessradioshow.com to the events section and click on AML wrestling or Title Match wrestling, and either one, and be and get it. Get Title Match Wrestling. You can check out the archives of AML Wrestling. He's a champion now, so you've got to support AML Wrestling, if anything, just to see his title reign over there now. So, folks, I mean, it's not like he disappeared into thin air. Things are going on with Beer City Bruisers, so by all means, get a subscription to Title Match Wrestling. You can catch Beer City Bruiser on pay-per-view and check out what he's doing with the old underwater needlepoint there at AML Wrestling. I encourage you to do so. Again, folks, want to remind you about Surfshark VPN. Check them out as well. We have a listing for them under our sponsors at darknessradioshow.com. But it is surfshark.deals/darkness. Again, the address to go to get your deal on a VPN, antivirus, malware, and much, much more to protect your computer. Surfshark.deals/darkness. Support the people who support the program here and keep us in business. It's real simple. Surfshark.deals/darkness. You'll get 3 months free along with your subscription if you use the code darkness at checkout when you go to surfshark.deals/darkness. Please help us out and help Surfshark help us out by subscribing to Surfshark VPN. Just a reminder to do that over the weekend. Going to be warming up this weekend and looking forward to that. So get out and enjoy the weekend. Have a little fun this weekend. And finally enjoy spring after the eternal winter at the end of spring that happened. I didn't thank Bob Dennis as well for joining us this weekend. Thanks, Bob, for being in this week and helping out with True Crime Tuesday. Sorry, ADD. My mind is floating around as I'm thanking people. A reminder to, again, be a light in someone's darkness. Go out there as the weather is warming up. Help people with post-snow pickup. Of course, as there's going to be stuff all over the place. There's going to be leaf pickup and things like that in people's yards. Just help out a neighbor or friend or whatever with spring cleanup. It's going to be needed this weekend, so be sure to help people out there. I'm going to be up at KNSI this weekend, knsiradio.com, Saturday morning from 7 to 9. Be sure to listen to me there. And next week, we got some great shows as well, so tune in. We're going to keep this train rolling. As we get into April, we've got some good stuff coming up here in April. One last reminder. Again, I mentioned that events section at darknessradioshow.com. Check out the events tab, Palmer House, May 18th. We've got just precious few tickets for this thing left. Again, the Potographs event over at the Palmer. It's Tim Miley, Richard Estep, and myself. We're raising money for the animals. It's a 1 day ghost hunting event up there. We've got some talks as well over there, and of course we're gonna have a great time. It's gonna be a great event, raising money for Eagle's Nest over there. Again, darknessradioshow.com. Look at the events tab. We've got that Michigan Paracon in August. I'll be there. There's a tab for that, a link for that. Check out the events tab this weekend as well. So there you go. I think that's all I've got. I've rambled long enough. It's time for you to go enjoy the weekend. So go do so. In the meantime, have fun. Enjoy life. I got nothing else. Thanks for listening to the best in paranormal programming. This has been Darkness Radio.